The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is russjournal.com. That's russjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Dr. Johnson, I basically gave a quick rundown to what we were going to be discussing here. Just a thumb sketch answer here. Medvedev's trip to the West Bank last week, the fact that he and then using the Palestinian Authority to convey the message that indeed Russia recognizes the Palestinian borders as dictated by the 1967 agreement, if we want to call it that, they have anything to do with the bombing that just took place at the airport?
Well, I have no hard evidence that there's a connection, although there's clearly circumstantial evidence that there's a connection. Russia's history in the Middle East is a substantial one. Both the Soviet Union and the post-Soviet Russia have been opposed to Israel and Zionism. Mm-hmm. Putin made that central to his foreign policy.
Yes.
In the Middle East and elsewhere. And Medvedev is just continuing that same idea.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is more important is that Hamas has named its own prime minister in Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
The Hamas party and the pro-Iranian movement
Lebanon. Hezbollah. I mean, I hate to interrupt, but you mean Hezbollah, right, doctor?
Yes. Sorry about that.
That's
yeah.
Okay.
There's just so much going on today.
Yes. Right.
The pro-Iranian movement has been able to name its own prime minister, mm-hmm. and the Zionist entity, both in the Middle East and in this country, has called for violence and rioting,
mm-hmm.
against the government. Now, it's been a long time since Russia hasn't been involved in this particular area, partially because she is financing Syria,
mm-hmm.
whose intelligence services are all over Lebanon right now and are very much a part of this movement, because Syria, although not a Shiite country, has been allied with Iran for a very long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Both Syria and Iran are very closely allied with Russia against Israel and the New World Order. And so on the very same day that anti-Hezbollah politicians are calling for violence,
mm-hmm.
against those who have caused this,
mm-hmm.
the bomb goes off in the Moscow airport. So
right.
That's kind of the circumstantial evidence here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the broader point is that Putin recognized Hamas' victory in the Palestine election several years ago.
Yes.
And here, the Hezbollah victory in Lebanon, also recognized by the Russian government, and Medvedev has made a big deal about this. So this is just one more time where the Russians have shown themselves to be the premier force against Zionism in the world.
Yes, I agree with you, and I think that especially since 1967, Doctor, with what happened with the attack on the USS Liberty, and the manner by which we literally came within 3 minutes of launching a nuclear strike against Egypt, and by we, I mean the United States, working in collusion with Israel, Soviet allied Egypt at that time. There has been, ever since 1967, this nagging, gnawing worry on the part particularly of the Israelis that you would see an increased Russian presence in the Middle East, and particularly now that the United States, basically, let's face it, our credibility is shot. Our, the one big stick that we have been able to wield without dropping bombs on people has been our financial power, and that is quickly and obviously waning. And so, you know, the Israelis have sat down and they said, listen, it's just a matter of time before these old, decrepit Arab regimes that are basically on the payroll of the United States are approached by the Russians who, let's face it, they anytime they wanted, if they were to come online economically with the rest of the world, with their natural resources, with their intellectual talent, they could easily rival, if not beat, and particularly if they were allied with strong oil-producing states such as Iran and others. And so they want to make sure that the Russians stay out of that part of the world. And so I cannot help but see this bombing that took place at the airport today. Yes, maybe there was some quote-unquote Islamic extremist who was strapped with explosives. But we have to go back further and find out who gave him his orders, who supplied him with his material. And I guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, you will find Israel's hand in this. They want to make sure that Russia understands that there are repercussions, very painful repercussions, associated with recognizing a Palestinian state and making overtures towards an increased presence in the Middle East. Mark Dankoff, I assume that you have heard the news and you have thoroughly digested it. How do you see this bombing at the airport? Are the three events, meaning Medvedev's trip to the Palestinian territories last week, where he was baptized in the River Jordan, where Jesus was baptized, and the fact that he reiterated Russia's position that Palestine exists within the 1967 borders. Do you see these events as linked together?
Well, I would say the same thing that Dr. Johnson has said, and that is that the evidence is circumstantial. I don't have a proof, clearly, but to me, when I look at some of these recent things that have been going on in the world, including the bombing of the Coptic Church in Alexandria, Egypt, which we've covered on this show, as well as some of these recent incidents in Iran, in Diyala province and in Balochistan province, and these assassinations that have taken place in Tehran itself in the last year or two. And it seems to me that when you look at all of these various events, that there seems to be a pattern here where just about the time that Israel is being put in a position of looking particularly bad politically in the world.
Yes.
Just about the time that there seems to be some progress being made, when some international head of state comes out with statements indicating that there is going to be some forthcoming action taken by his or her government that is pro-Palestinian in nature, and that is going to demand that Israel return to its pre-67 borders, and that is going to demand that Israel stop its siege of Gaza, lo and behold, there always seems to be, subsequent to such a development, a bomb blast or an assassination somewhere in the world that then is conveniently pinned on Islamic extremists. And it seems to me, again, that the evidence is circumstantial. I can't prove it. Dr. Johnson acknowledges that he can't prove it. But it's a pattern that is so striking in its recurrence that for those of us who watch the activities of the Israeli Mossad and who have our own sources who tell us about the extent of the Israeli Mossad's connections to all kinds of groups, including the Mujahideen-e Khalq, which has taken responsibility for some of these crimes in Iran, it certainly underscores why we can be honestly and legitimately suspicious of this latest thing that has taken place in Moscow.
Okay. All right, so let me play devil's advocate here for a second. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that indeed it is exactly as the news has portrayed it to be. Dr. Johnson, what possible benefits could come from Chechen separatists or Chechen rebels from doing something like this?
Well, there has only been speculation, at least in the Russian media, that Chechen rebels were in any way involved. The Chechen rebel movement for a long time has been penetrated by CIA. There's no doubt in my mind that there's Mossad involvement in Chechnya, and the Iranian government has actually for quite a long time distance itself from the Chechen movement. I think that movement in general is really a group of very powerful families and clans in the country waging an irregular guerrilla war against Russia. But I do think that the West has attempted to use it for the sake of destabilizing the area in order to get Caspian Sea oil. As far as Azerbaijan is concerned, Azerbaijan is one of the major players in the Caspian Sea region and is very much a colony of Mossad, as a means of harming Russian interests in the Caspian Sea as well as in Armenia. As we speak, now this may change later on, but as we speak, the Russian media is not blaming Islam in any way.
Okay.
There's speculation concerning the Chechen movement, but at least officially, there's been no accusation against Islam in general or the Chechens more specifically.
Okay.
They are saying that it's a suicide bomber, but they're not connecting it at the moment with any broader political group.
Okay. Well, I find that very interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt, but you know, if indeed this were Chechen rebels, and let's face it, I mean, the Russian intelligence services are some of the best in the world. If it were indeed the Chechens, if they could tie the Muslims to this in any way, they certainly would, as a means of shoring up their support base at home. So the fact that they are not saying that this was the work of the Chechen rebels indicates to me that they know who was more than likely responsible for doing this. Go ahead if you would. I'm sorry to interrupt you like that. Go ahead with what you were saying before I cut in.
I think you may be onto something there. But Russian FSB has always held that the Chechen rebel movement has been supported by Western powers. So I'm not, even if they were to come out and say, oh yes, this is an organized Chechen organized crime movement, there's always been that accusation that the West has been arming these groups. So to some extent they're really talking about the same thing. Also keep in mind that Putin and his radically reformed government, starting in 1999, inherited this Chechen war.
Yes,
and it was Putin that negotiated some kind of a peace with at least the main Chechen factions, and this is something also that permitted him to warm up to Iran and created this Russia Armenia Iran alliance, which is so absolutely central in world politics right now. Furthermore, I've said this before on your show and elsewhere, I'm not so certain that the average Chechen involved in this fighting is particularly Islamic. I think it's largely a secular country due to Soviet influence. I know they kicked the Wahhabis out of kicked them back to Saudi Arabia. So I'm not so sure, even from the Islamic point of view, that Chechnya really is representative of Islamic opinion in the world. But if it's a bona fide Chechen terrorist hit, I guess my opinion is, like a lot of terrorist acts, the point is to make occupation of Chechnya, which of course, also inherited from the Soviet era, to make it very, very expensive. And in hopes to remove any kind of public support for the war there. The Russian military has always gone back and forth. Alexander Lebed, who in my opinion was assassinated, was very iffy about the war in Chechnya. This is something that was promoted by the Yeltsin administration and cost Russia quite a bit of credibility. At the moment, it could be organized crime, it could be Chechnya, but all of these have been heavily involved with Western intelligence services. So really, it can be considered one and the same movement.
Right. Well, let me just tell you this, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, okay? First of all, we are taught that, you know, the Muslims are smart enough to build a nuclear weapon and they're crazy enough to use it against the world, okay? The whole world. They're going to kill everybody if they get hold of a nuclear weapon, despite the fact that Pakistan has upwards of 100 of them and has not used them yet. But irrespective of that, when you look at this thing that took place, okay, your average Muslim, whatever you want to call him, fundamentalist, extremist, terrorist, whatever, he would recognize that at this particular point in time, this is going to do him and his cause absolutely no good. I mean, as you pointed out, Mark, at a time when Israel right now is absolutely floundering in the public opinion polls, at the time when the United States is universally despised around the world, and in large part due to the absolute brutality, unrestrained brutality that has been inflicted upon millions of innocent men, women, and children in Iraq and Afghanistan, okay? Let's face it, as far as the PR war goes right now, excepting certain pockets within the United States where you've just got brain-dead people who couldn't find their rear end if they used both hands, generally speaking, you know, the world is tired of this war. I guarantee you that the smarter people within countries, including in the West, recognize that this thing is not going to go away unless we get down to some brass tacks here. And so from a strategic perspective, the Muslims have absolutely nothing to gain by something like this. I mean, after all, you know, you've got countries, you've got at least five South American countries now that have recognized Palestine within the 67 borders. You have the worldwide condemnation of Israel in the wake of Operation Cast Lead, in the wake of the slaughter of the nine civilians aboard the Turkish ship. Okay, so something like this, as far as it being a something that is a huge setback in terms of what is increasingly, if we're not going to say favorable, we will at least say fair towards the perception of Islam and of the Muslim countries and all the rest of it. You know, the rest of the world, I think, has come to this point where they said, okay, listen, let's just leave them alone so they can live their lives and so that we can be left alone to live our lives. So from that standpoint, my point is this. There is absolutely nothing to gain for any Muslim group to do something like this, which is why, again, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, you ask when any kind of crime takes place, who stands to benefit from this? The only one who stands to benefit from this is Israel. The Russian government's not going to benefit from it because it's going to appear weak in the face of this this quote-unquote Islamic threat that it can't protect its people. We already saw in the news how the Russian stock market took a huge dive as a result of what happened. And so the only character on this chessboard that stands to benefit from this is Israel. Now, let me ask you this. Let's see. Let's go to Mark real quick. Mark, you just heard my summation as to why I will, at this early stage in the game, say, no way, Jose, the Muslims didn't do this. The Chechens did not do this. The only one who stands to benefit from this is Israel. I realize that I'm piggybacking on your comments earlier with regards to every time something seems to go wrong for Israel, that somewhere else something seems to blow up that is tied to Islamic extremists. I assume that you would agree with me on this. And then if you would, Mark, please comment on this thing that just took place and bring it into context with the Iranian situation that you are extremely familiar with.
Well, I think there's definitely a connection in terms of the larger patterns here. And to me, as we look at the situation between Israel and Iran, it's abundantly clear that Iran does not have presently a weaponized nuclear program. The last national intelligence estimate produced by 16 of our own intelligence agencies stated that. And yet there has repeatedly been, of course, a disinformation program on this in the Western media to make it appear that they, in fact, do have such a program. In conjunction with that, it's becoming abundantly clear that the Mujahideen-e cult in Iran, the MEK, a very long history behind this organization, and it is a so-called, quote-unquote, Islamic Marxist terrorist group, although Rudolph Giuliani and others are trying to say now that it isn't a terrorist group because this group is now working with the American CIA and the Israeli Mossad. But be that as it may, you have a situation where, again, when there are things that are taking place in the world, for example, in Iran, that clearly involve acts of terror, we either have responsibility for these actions being taken, like in the case of Iran, by one to three groups, the MEK principally, Jundallah secondarily, and that these acts, of course, by people like Dr. Paul Sheldon Foote, who know the inside story on this inside and out, can in turn be traced principally to Israel. And yet this has given Israel a plausible deniability scenario, which it continues to cling to in regard to these kinds of deaths and atrocities. This dovetails, it seems to me, with two other things. One are these incidents that keep taking place in the world at most convenient times, that are always traced in the Western media and in Western-backed governments, for example, like the Egyptian government, to Al-Qaeda and so-called Al-Qaeda-related groups like the Islamic Army of Gaza, which is supposedly, according to the Egyptian government, behind this recent bombing of this Coptic church in Alexandria, or the this group that I had never heard of before, the Islamic State of Iraq, right, that laid siege, allegedly, to this church in Baghdad last October. In all of these cases, these actions are very convenient in pattern and dovetail with the kind of propaganda that we periodically see coming forth from elements of our own government and the Israeli government and the American neoconservative community, which is designed to demonize as a means of justifying in the minds of our citizens anything that they might at some point figure out is linked to us rather than they, meaning our government and Israel's intelligence community, as opposed to the alleged culprits that the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times keep talking about. Mm-hmm. I'll say one thing in regard to this, and I'll turn it back over to Dr. Johnson. Look at this movie, Iranium, or Iranium, that is now playing in Ottawa, Canada. It has the fingerprints of the CIA and the Mossad all over it in terms of people publicly linked to the to this movie and to its promotion and to its distribution. This includes Clara Lopez of the CIA, who is clearly a major player in the CIA's role with the Mujahideen-e-Khalq in Iran. It has links to people like Eric Cantor, the Zionist-controlled House Majority Leader now in the United States, who is an Orthodox Jew, and Cantor is publicly taking responsibility for making sure that virtually anyone on Capitol Hill who will watch will see this movie on what is what depicts Iran's supposed burgeoning nuclear capabilities and its supposed intentions of utilizing these against Israel. All of which, of course, flies in the face of the last official national intelligence estimate that has been done on the subject. The long and the short of it is that it seems that we've got a number of things going on there. One is the continued utilization of front groups in what I think is a plausible deniability strategy. The other, from time to time, in the Western media and in the Western filmmaking industry and so forth, is to come out with productions freely floated, especially in the neoconservative press, that suggest that to the extent that the United States and or Israel might be behind something that most reasonable people would deem to be criminal, this can conveniently be washed away in the minds of most of the of our own citizens if they believe that in fact these things are quote unquote justifiable, just as Israel's official findings on its own Bobby Bamara raid appear on page 812 today in the Wall Street Journal, whereas we should not be surprised that the Barron Commission, headed by the Supreme Court judge over there, indicates that all of Israel's actions last May 31st in attacking the Bobby Bamara are justifiable because, quote, Israel is effectively in a state of war with the territory's rulers who are from the Palestinian Hamas movement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big game, and unfortunately the end game is that the average American is largely in the process of being drawn into a military, political, and economic catastrophe in all of this that is beyond description.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on the Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Let's return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Dr. Johnson, over the summer there was a spate of articles that came out in mainstream news, and of course in Israeli press as well, detailing how Russia seemed to be distancing herself away from Iran. She said that she was not going to supply Iran with the S-300 anti-aircraft system that Iran would desperately need in order to ward off any kind of aggressive action on the part of the United States or Israel. My theory at the time was that this was being done for public consumption, Russia distancing herself away from Iran in this way in order to basically draw the United States and Iran into, or the United States and Israel into acting more bellicose and irrational with regards to Iran's nuclear program. I mean, let's face it, if Russia were worried about Iran using this nuclear technology that Russia is supplying to her in order to build bombs, Russia wouldn't be building these nuclear reactors for her. So let me ask you this. In your opinion, the recent stories, and by that, like I said, again, going back to this past summer, that seemed to indicate that there was a chilling of relations between Iran and Russia, do you believe this was the real deal, or was this being done for public consumption?
I believe it was done for public consumption. By the way, Mark, I really appreciate what you said. I think you hit it right on target, and I think front groups are, in fact, essential to global politics right now, the way it's played by Israel and the United States. Anyway, the point is that Iran is very close to Russia. Iran is very closely tied into the Russian economy.
Mm-hmm.
Russia has a huge presence in the Iranian economy, both militarily and in terms of the Iranian energy sector. Whatever that bunch of articles that came out a few months ago, I have not come across any follow-ups.
Mm-hmm.
It was just this spate of pieces that came out.
Right.
I think it was in early August, and I've heard nothing. I've heard nothing since then.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was just a simple matter of propaganda. Russia, and from Moscow's point of view, Iran is central to Russian foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's central to Russian foreign policy in Central Asia, concerning India, and concerning China. The alliance between Tehran and Moscow is mutually beneficial, and it's part of the move, the central moves of Russia to create a multipolar world to do battle against Washington, D.C. and Tel Aviv.
Right. Exactly.
And Iran is the key to that, and China is very important to that as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the Iranian petroleum technology is of Russian background, is of Russian design, and Russian technicians are all over that area. And if the Israelis or the Americans decide to strike Iranian oil and natural gas transportation and transports, they will kill Russians.
Yes.
And that's a huge problem.
This display of force that we saw took place back between Russia and Georgia back in, I believe it was August of 2008. My assumption at that time was that this was more of a message to Israel and America to stay out of Russia's backyard. And as I said at the beginning of this program, Doctor, this latest event taking place with this bombing, this has ratcheted things up, I believe, to a very dangerous level, because one of the things that Russia wanted to get across when it rolled across the borders from the northern regions of Georgia and basically just pummeled Georgia like a rag doll was as a demonstration to the rest of the world that you're not going to push us around. You know, if you decide to start making trouble in our backyard, we are going to overcome that trouble with overwhelming force. Now, the fact of the matter is, as we all know, Russia is a very capable player, not the least of which is the fact that she is armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons. Now, if you would, Doctor, comment on how things have been ratcheted up in terms of the danger level of some new unforeseen conflict taking place. And if you would, I realize I'm bombarding you with a lot of data at one time here, but the agreement that seemed to have been arrived at recently between the Obama administration and Russia concerning long-range missiles being placed in Europe and all of the rest of that, if you could pull all of that together for us and let us know, you know, have we moved from DEFCON 3 to DEFCON 2?
Well, first of all, I've stated on your program and elsewhere that Obama's stance on Russia is very, very rational and very intelligent. It's the neocon Republicans that have crucified him on the Russian issue. Mm-hmm. John McCain, who is an Israel firster, as you well know, has demanded American war against Belarus, which of course would automatically mean war against Russia.
Right.
He has demanded war against Syria, which would mean war against Russia. And of course, he demands war on Iran, which may also lead to war on Russia.
And probably China as well.
And probably China. And he said the same things about Venezuela. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are very few countries in the world, I think it's probably Great Britain and Israel, that John McCain does not want to wage war on.
Right.
So, and Scotland, probably. So the issue is, Russia has important client states throughout the world, a close alliance with China, a military alliance with India, which is iffy because India and China are bitter opponents. Mm-hmm. And then the U.S. and the Israelis are operating in Turkey, in Azerbaijan, and in Pakistan as a way to counter that. Mm-hmm. The big area of concern is the remainder of Central Asia, but now you have Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan who have largely sided with the Russians and the Chinese, and I do believe that the riots in Tajikistan, I guess last fall or last mm-hmm. summer, mm-hmm. Were instigated by Israel and the United States mm-hmm. against Chinese interests in that part of the world. I also think they financed the Dalai Lama and they financed the Tibetan separatist movement and all the rest of it. But the threat level will go up radically if there are any further assassinations and killings in Iran, if there are any attacks on pro-Russian elements in the governments in Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan, because that's the heart of the Russian and the Iranian oil and natural gas transit routes heading to India. As well as China. Mm-hmm. So this is a major economic hub in the world, and Russia really does have a lock on much of the Central Asian oil and natural gas, which is a big part of Russian hard currency earnings.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Russia is running a massive trade surplus
yes.
with most of the world means that the Russian the amount of American dollars and gold that Russia has now is really reaching almost Chinese proportions.
Really?
Absolutely. Russia's population is now moving back up. Abortions have fallen substantially over the last few years. Mm-hmm. The economy continues to move forward at about 5 or 6% a year. Mm-hmm. In terms of GDP growth, which is about the same as China right now. And so I know that's only a superficial answer to your question, but is there anything else you want me to tie into that while we're on it?
Mark,
could I ask one question?
Go right ahead.
Dr. Johnson, you made brief reference to the possibility that organized crime could have played a role in this Moscow airport bombing that we're reading about in today's papers. Now, I know that you have written for E. Michael Jones' Culture Wars, frankly, what I consider to be the most informed, academically buttressed essay I have read anywhere on the Russian Jewish Mafia, both in that country as well as the way in which it's operating in the United States. If Russian organized crime was involved in this thing in Moscow in any way, does that in turn suggest a possible Israeli linkage to any of this?
Absolutely. It suggests it, and in my mind, it almost proves it. I wrote an article some time ago on the Punsky Gorge in northeastern Georgia, and the Punsky Gorge is one of the world's central areas for prostitution, slavery, child slavery and child prostitution, as well as drugs. It's coming in from Afghanistan and other American-controlled areas in Central Asia, and it's one of the main hotspots in the world for Mossad activism. Mossad is clearly involved in international organized crime, and the intelligence work, both Western and Eastern, both Russian and Chinese, on the Punsky Gorge in Georgia proves beyond a doubt in my mind that Mossad is serving as the protector and enforcer in organized crime movements. That's the case in Kosovo. That's the case in Chechnya. It's the case in northeastern Georgia. Mm-hmm. And given the fact that Khodorkovsky, who is a Jewish oligarch in Russia, who was put in prison by Putin back in 2001, has received yet another longer sentence in Russian prisons just last month, I believe, which has the Jews of the world extremely upset and the Israelis extremely upset. That also could be another cause for violent action against against Moscow. Mm-hmm. So not only does it suggest a Mossad connection, in my mind it would prove a Mossad connection.
Absolutely. I hadn't even thought about the whole issue of Khodorkovsky getting that sentence again. And, of course, you know, this is not just for public consumption. Russia's going to do something like this to let her citizens know that, you know, she's a law and order state, and she's going to make sure that criminals are punished. But it's also a way of sending a message to the elite Jewish financial power around the world that we still are not going to play games with you. We are going to make sure that Russian interests are maintained, and that's why we're going to stick this SOB in prison even longer. Now, let's talk about this for just a second here as far as, the more subtle implications to what took place at the airport today. You know, as both of you gentlemen know, the way that governments send messages, you know, they speak in a code much in the same way that gangsters will say things. You know, they will, you know, when Michael Corleone is saying, you know, we'll make him an offer he can't refuse, of course, this all appears within the very sterile, harmless confines of business discussion, you know, making somebody an offer they can't refuse. Well, naturally, people think, oh, well, he's just going to get such a good deal out of this that he can't turn it down. And what he's really saying is that if you refuse, we're going to kill you. Now, as I just pointed out, with Russia going ahead and putting Khodorkovsky back in prison where he belongs for an extended period of time as a means of sending diplomatic and political messages to the powers that be around the world, namely America and Israel and their Jewish financial elite. This bombing that took place in Moscow, I believe, is their reply to that, to where they're saying not just to Russia, but really to the entire world, if you are even thinking about extending diplomatic recognition to the Palestinians within the 1967 borders. We are going to start blowing up your airports one by one, and you know that we will be able to do it. We can put our people in anywhere we want, anytime we want. If we can pull something like the USS Liberty or 9/11 off and get away with it, believe me, putting bombs in your airports and destabilizing otherwise stable political systems is going to be a cakewalk. So what I would ask both of you gentlemen to comment on, obviously, what is it? Let's just lay all the cards on the table here. What is it about the Palestinians having their own country that has got the Israelis so up in arms to the point where they would be willing to go to lengths such as bombing the airport, the largest airport of a nation's capital that happens to be armed to the teeth with nuclear weapons and is not a player in terms of this thing known as the Jewish New World Order? Dr. Johnson.
I don't think that it would be a cakewalk. If this is what we're suggesting, that Mossad had a role, either directly or indirectly, in this bombing, it is really a part of, you know, Israel's self-destructive mentality. Putin and Medvedev are immensely popular. Mm-hmm. Russia has a tremendous level of national unity. The pro-Western parties are minuscule, and they wouldn't exist at all mm-hmm. if it wasn't for CIA and George Soros money.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I should mention that Putin years ago recognized Hamas's victory in the Palestinian elections. Mm-hmm. Putin years ago recognized the necessity for a truly independent Palestinian state. He's come out in favor of that and has recognized the Palestine Authority, for better or for worse, as a partner with Russia. And Syria has done the same, needless mm-hmm. to say, because Syria is an ally of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
So this sort of thing is absolutely nothing new so far as Russia is concerned. Russia has been supportive of the Palestinian cause since the 1950s.
Right.
So this is just a continuation of a much older policy.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Russian military forces are irritated by what they've long known to be Mossad, CIA movements against their country, Israel is really just acting in a self-destructive way.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be a cakewalk. This kind of terrorism will not be a cakewalk. And if Russia just comes out publicly
mm-hmm.
and says that we are now at war with the Israeli state and its client states around the world, that's very much a possibility.
Yes.
If they continue to push and overplay their hand
mm-hmm.
Relative to Moscow.
Well, this is the point that I was making before, which is that this latest development with this bombing taking place, I mean, you push the Russians, like I said, what took place in Georgia 3 years ago or more, we need to learn a lesson from that. They made sure to send a message to the world that you're not going to, pardon my French, you're not going to screw around with us and get away with it. And so something like this, and what I find troubling, like I said, Doctor, what I find troubling is that Russia has not yet indicated that the Muslims were behind this, which means that they are keeping their cards very close to the chest here, and it may very well be that they will announce that their intelligence or their investigation has indicated that it was not Islamic terrorists at this point, but rather that it was Western agencies that were behind it, at which point this thing is going to enter a whole new level in terms of danger to an already fragile peace. Mark Dankoff, I realize I asked that question a few minutes ago, and as usual, it was extremely long. But relative to what Dr. Johnson just said, what is it about the Palestinians being recognized within the internationally recognized borders as laid out by the UN back in 1967? What is it about this that has got Israel so nervous that we, at least assuming here, that she would be willing to blow up an airport in a nuclear-armed country such as Russia?
I would suspect, I'll make two comments on this, I would suspect that maybe what they're concerned about is not only a loss of hegemony in Palestine, which not only would involve diplomatic isolation on their part from the rest of the world community, but I also think that demographically this is a time bomb for Israel because of the continued growth of the Palestinian and Arab populations in that area relative to the Jewish state, and that if there is truly going to be a so-called democracy there, which is what the neoconservatives keep talking about, that would de facto delegitimize the state of Israel in any sense of the word over time. The other thing that I think comes into play here is that Israel, if this situation in Palestine is effectively chipped away at by the international community for all the right reasons, it may also threaten, in the Jewish mind, their larger plans, not simply for Palestine, but for the rest of the world, in terms of the so-called New World Order, mm-hmm. and the role of hegemony that they have played in the international central banking community. Mm-hmm. Finally, I would say that as a result of what we're talking about, what may have been behind this situation in Moscow today, I'll say what I said the other day on the Voice of Reason Network when I was interviewed by Robert Stark. In this country, the people of the United States had better start asking questions about the Israeli role in the American telecommunications industry, the Israeli role in all of these so-called homeland security fronts and organizations that are getting contracts to do business with our federal government. Because it seems to me that between those factors and the Israeli role in providing security through its front organizations at many of our major airports underscores that what is allegedly possible, what may have happened in Moscow today, what may have happened in Alexandria the other day, what may have happened in Baghdad last October with his church, may await us in this country,
yes.
Not simply with 9/11, if we're right about what happened there, but with things future that will make our own situation in domestic security in this country a nightmare.
Absolutely. Well, let me tell both of you guys. You got it right, but the one thing that I was looking for, and I'm actually glad that you didn't say it, because it gives me the chance to grandstand here for yet another moment, is the reason why the Israelis are so terrified of the recognition of the Palestinians within the 1967 border, okay? And I hope, ladies and gentlemen, that what I'm about to say scares the hell out of you, because it should, all right? The reason why Israel is so terrified of the Palestinians having their own state within the 1967 border, to the point that they would be willing to do something as foolhardy and as dangerous as to maneuver an explosion that with resulting in massive loss of life in a nuclear-armed country such as Russia, is because we are dealing with a group of people here, a state run by a group of people who are inherently irrational. Their entire identity, their entire worldview is formed along these stories, these biblical stories that says that God loves them more than everyone else, and God gave them this land, and not one centimeter of this land as dictated according to the Bible, you know, where they have been given all of that land between the Nile and the Euphrates River, that not one centimeter of that land belongs to anyone except for them. And so what we're dealing with here, again, at the risk of overusing analogies here, is the same situation that we saw in the movie Fatal Attraction, where you have this crazy woman who has this, what I would consider an irrational affection for this married man, and she's got this idea in her head that, you know, as she sees it, it's she and him together forever, and there can't be anything else but that. And so she's willing to resort to all of these insane tactics, these insane measures, in order to bring about this perfect picture of heaven as she has it in her mind, in order to have this thing happen, including, as we found out by watching the movie, showing up at the house with a big butcher knife, right? So this is the thing that we have to keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen. One of the points that I try to make often on this program, which is that we are dealing with inherently irrational, and I would go so far as to say insane characters when we are dealing with Israel. What other country do we know of in history that has, as part of their protocol, the plan to release their nuclear weapons on the entire world, if it looks like their precious little experiment in Jewish self-rule is going to crumble? And that is the point that I wanted to get across in this program today, which is that with the bombing that has taken place at the Moscow airport that has resulted in the deaths of 30 people, things have been ratcheted up very quickly and very dangerously. Fellas, amazingly, we are at the end of the program here. I could have gone on literally for several more hours. Both of you are a wealth of information and analysis. I want, Dr. Johnson, if you would please, I want to give you a last chance here, your last stand, Johnson's last stand, before we close the program out. Tell the folks what you think they need to understand about this this latest development in order to put it into context in understanding this quickly crumbling world around them.
Well, you need to remember, when Vladimir Grudzinski condemns Putin, essentially for kicking him out of the country, mm-hmm. it was Grudzinski who admitted in public that he has helped finance the Chechen rebel movement, mm-hmm. that he has helped finance the Georgian military along with George Soros, that he almost exclusively, along with George Soros, financed the so-called Orange Revolution in Ukraine mm-hmm. in 2004. These are the same people who are backing the so-called color revolutions in Belarus. Mm-hmm. They tried to do it in Lebanon. They tried to do it in Syria. They failed with the latter two areas. If this new Hezbollah prime minister is going to stay in Lebanon, that is a de facto alliance between Damascus mm-hmm. and the state of Lebanon, and that could be absolutely destructive to Israel. And as Mark mentioned, the demographic issue is a huge problem because the Jews are using birth control and abortion,
yes.
and the Arabs are not, mm-hmm. and they will simply overwhelm the state of Israel in terms of sheer numbers.
Exactly.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned in to Radio Aryan.